It's April 17, 2024, on the day of recording, and this is Big Innings, America's cricket podcast, brought to you by Emerging Cricket. Today we'll be joined by Smit Patel from Crick Buzz to discuss USA Men's T20 Series sweep of Canada. We'll talk a little bit about the women's team too, but if you like what we do and you want to support Big Innings and Emerging Cricket, consider helping us out on Patreon. And we've discussed in the past how much we wanted to have Smit Patel on the show. We almost got him on one of our post-game shows during the first season of Major League Cricket, but I think it was too late for him by the time we went live. We tended to go about 1:30 in the morning.
That's pretty early, man. Applebee's was still open when we started recording most of those days. If it's good enough for Applebee's, I feel like it's early enough.
Only Applebee's was open, we should point out. This is Dallas, too. Everything closes at 2 a.m. in Dallas, and everybody has to get off the streets by 2:30 to get their cars out of their parking lots. It's like a whole rush hour happens around 2 to 2:30 in Dallas. But yeah, only Applebee's seemed to be open every night. But tonight he's joining us. We don't have the threat of Applebee's. But Smit, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Long time coming. Speaking of Applebee's, there's a brownie bites that they sell. That's one of the house favorites and my favorite too. So I go to Applebee's frequently as well for dessert, not for anything else, but for dessert. So cut me some slack over there.
I didn't know you were Marshawn Lynch, the football player. He was a big Applebee's fan.
Oh, nice. My football game is pretty weak. But yes, thanks for having me. And it's great to be on your guys' show. It's the best show. Your USA content is so rich that even sometimes I get to learn a lot as well, because there are so many things that you guys break as well, which then I tend to follow up with other people as well. Hey, what's going on? Nate just said this. Aman just said this. So it's quite informative at the same time as well. So good going, guys.
Thanks for that. Smit's been covering cricket in the USA for quite some time now, and he's right on top of things. He writes a lot of excellent little profiles about some of the players and some of their histories. And I've talked to some people who've been interviewed by you, Smit, and they love how you approach your interviews, how you handle the subject. So yeah, we're really happy to have you.
Yeah, it's quite amusing the way I got into Crick Buzz. I got into cricket writing, that is. Everyone's a failed cricketer, right? That's how you graduate into this whole thing. Nate, you might be a failed cricketer. Aman, I'm sure you might be a failed cricketer. That's how you latch onto this. But yeah, so obviously a failed cricketer. And around 2019, had a terrible breakup. So you wouldn't imagine what I did. Obviously, you hit the gym when you have a terrible breakup. But apart from that, one day, I opened my LinkedIn and texted. There's a text thing on LinkedIn. I texted about like 15 editors of cricket websites. Or print or whatever. It was September or something. I get a text back. After 5 months, and this is all destiny, right? I get a text back from our Crick Buzz editor. Hey, Smit, something has come up. This is my number. Call me. But before that, I would like to ask my gratitude on to Peter Delapena as well, because this is something interesting as well. Monang Patel, who is one of my dear friends, and everyone knows that, he told me Peter Delapena is looking for a text commentator for the USA, PNG, and Namibia series. It was in Miami in 2019. USA's first ODI home series. I think that was the series. And Cricken Forward looking for a text commentator. Peter just took me on board. It was as simple as that. I used to comment a lot on his articles and things as well. So he saw my zest, he saw my zeal for cricket writing, and he just took me on board, took me under his wings. After the first ODI, he told me how to approach things and how not to approach things in a live environment. So I was coding as well as commentating. So it was quite an experience. But yeah, then Crickbus saw my body of work with Crickinfo. They asked me for a chart. They asked me to chart out my strategy to cover American cricket. So that's how I've been with them since the past 4 or 5 years now. So it's been a great journey, and it's so fulfilling. It's so enriching. It is so gratifying. The stories that I've done, even you know, Nate, right? Even Aman as well, right? Because, Nate, your writing has an element of compassion, element of human stories, and even Aman does his homework really well during his commentary. Aman's commentary is not just about, hey, he smoked that for a six. Hey, that was a peach of a delivery. No, our content is not that, especially when you see USA in a microcosm. USA cricket, I don't mean the board, cricket in USA in a microcosm. There are so many beautiful stories that might not even be in India or Pakistan or the some of the full member countries or even some of the associates. USA, cricket in USA is a different kettle of fish altogether. Some of the stories that I've done, Zahid Zakhel, I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing his name right. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right. He had to flee Afghanistan without shoes, without flip-flops, but was living in a camp or somewhere. His story, Usman Rafiq's story, the way he has made a comeback to the national team in the 50-over format deservedly last year, and his performance in the minor league as well. It's a different story of how he doesn't fit in the team combination. That's a different story altogether. But to pick yourself up during those trying circumstances, lead your team out there, take 2 6-wicket hauls in a row, develop a new delivery, it's a matter of great guts. And even there are so many other stories, right? Like, for example, how weekend culture is in the US for teenage kids, right? Everyone wants to go out, everyone wants to do things. But guys like Sagar Patel, guys like Ritwik Behra, ever since they've come to their senses, ever since they've come to grips around the world around themselves, they've been on 4-hour journeys, 5-hour journeys, 6-hour journeys, not just for games, every weekend for nets as well. So that's a huge ask. That's a huge, I should say, commitment, determination. So these are the stories that people need to know as well, and egg the cricketers in USA, egg them on as well.
Sports are all about stories. That's what the crux of it is. And I think that's why we all do what we do, right? I think it's fun to tell the stories, and we all see that these stories need to be shared. We've all saw something like when I had the opportunity to write a paper about Dane for my class. I thought that was the coolest thing I've ever done. Tell his story from what he had to deal with in South Africa to come to the USA. And that journey is fantastic. And then when he went back to South Africa, I'm like, man, maybe he needs a follow-up. I think that's what gets us all up in the morning and keeps us going, especially when things probably don't go right for us a lot of the time. It's always cool to see you, Smit, when you come out. I always see it on Twitter whenever you put something out there. All right, what does Smit have cooked for us today? Because something cool is coming. Like that's a really cool thing to have.
Yeah, I could remember not just these players, right? Rahul Jariwala ran like, what, 2 miles to his best friend's place, right? He was sobbing and crying. And look at the way he made a comeback as well. It's these poignant chapters in people's lives, in people's stories. Everyone keeps talking about the sagas and the stories of people who've born and bred here, right? They have their own stories and struggles as well. But look at the struggles that the MLC players had to undergo as well. There have been instances where some of the MLC players, you know, right now may not know where the next paycheck is coming from. And to perform in that environment is so difficult that it's hard to put it to words, actually.
Yeah, 100%. There's no guarantees in the sport. You have to give yourself, you have to give all of yourself to have a chance. You can't even have a chance unless you give all of yourself. And then you only have a chance. And that's the thing. It's all about the people and the stories. And yes, as fans, we have disappointments. We're fans first. All three of us. We're fans first. And we have our disappointments as fans. And sometimes we think, oh, why am I putting myself through this? The players really put themselves through the stuff. They put themselves through so much in this country. And probably every associate nation has their own stories. We've got our own unique versions because we have our own unique obstacles. Like you said, the 4-hour drives to a net session, that happens when you live in a country that's as large as ours. And you need to travel that far to get to the next hub of cricket. You know, that happens a lot here. But yes, as you mentioned, the stories, I feel like I get to do a podcast with one of the stories every week. And that's Amit, you know, who I've known since he was, you know, 12 years old or so. And I saw him in 2018, you know, when we were all pitching in to try to make that series happen. I've seen him since then, and seeing his development in commentary and his passion for what he does and knowing what he wants to do and going after and seizing, that's another great story to me. And I just like being involved in all of these great stories. You know, we have, as I said in my recent article about Nitish Kumar, he first represented USA on the same day that Steven Taylor first represented USA. And yes, they were on opposite ends of Bermuda, and it was a U15 game back in mid-2000s. But it was on the same exact day. And then 2 days later, they played each other and took each other's wicket. And these little neat coincidences. Then they're both probably the best homegrown products of this century for their respective nations. They grew up in their respective countries. And those little things are really cool to me. And then, of course, they both were captains of their national team in their early 20s. And they both debuted in their teenage years for their national side. And now they're on the same team in USA. That's a great story. I think that's really cool. And Nitish Kumar is named after a National Hockey League player who happened to be one of the most famous American National Hockey League players ever. And he played for the USA, and now Nitish is playing for the USA. I love all of these little stories. Like you said, it's all about the people. It's always about the people. And when you get to know some of these cricketers, you want to tell their stories. You said Zahid, who came here from Afghanistan. I remember meeting him in Houston and talking about this with him, and then shortly after I saw your article, I was like, man, that really was a story that needed to be told. But yeah, we appreciate your stories, we appreciate your perspective, and giving us the player's perspective, it really makes this whole ecosystem much richer because you're a part of it.
Thanks a lot. Happy to do much more with you guys.
yeah, we hope so. Hopefully we'll get you on a post-game show this year at Major League Cricket. Maybe we'll pre-order the Applebee's chocolate thing that you like.
Brownie bites, to be precise.
Brownie bites. Yeah, there you go. Maybe we'll get you some of the Trader Joe's ones. So let's talk a little bit now about the Women's ODI series. They fall to Scotland in their second ODI ever. By only 41 runs, this is a good Scotland team. This is Sarah Bryce, Catherine Bryce, and of course, Moxud, who took 4 wickets in the game against the USA. But this is a game where Sarah Bryce scores 84 runs off 122 balls, and USA takes 7 wickets against Scotland and lose by 41. This is not a bad debut for USA women's team in ODI cricket.
No, it isn't at all, honestly. It could have got a lot worse. You look at the bowling numbers, and the economy rates are pretty good. You're talking about maybe one person ahead of 7, and again, not a lot of these women play 50-overs cricket. We don't play a lot of 50-overs cricket in the United States, so it's a big adjustment. You're in the Middle East. It's a lot hotter over there, and so for them to come out with that kind of bowling performance was really good. Again, you're going to have great players do great things, and Sarah Bryce is a great player. She's going to do her thing, and she did. And then with the bat, honestly, to get to 210 was... I thought to get past the 200 mark was a really big achievement. We haven't really seen that a lot. To finish out 50 overs, another really big thing. We don't see that a lot. And yes, would they have liked to have gone and won the game? Absolutely. But there's good things you can take away. This Shadhindra was a positive from the series. Bhuja Ganesh got some experience, right? Didn't go the way she wanted it to. But here's a girl who's just turning 17 years old. And Anika Kolan doing her thing in number 3. What did... Uzma tell us last week, Nate, she's going to give you 33 from 60 pretty consistently. That's her role, and she's going to do it. What does she do? She does it once again. And I think Aditi Bhatia-Dasma was another one. I really like the way she bats, or like the way she goes about her business. I still think she should be batting higher than where she was at number 9, but she played pretty well as well. So again, a lot of real positives from the women's team, even though you didn't get that first win.
You called it last week with Chidasama. I believe last week on the show, you said that you thought she should be batting in a better position. I believe that's what you said. But
I believe I said it too. If you're going to give me credit for it, I'll take it.
But she was a big part of them, of USA women's team getting to 50 overs, scoring 25 off of 30 in the process. That's pretty good when you're in a situation where you're down 9 wickets. Like I said, this is a really good effort, I think. This shows a lot of promise to me.
Yeah, and the desire to just be there while you're batting, showing some doggedness. And I was really inspired by Ritu Singh, Gitika Kodali, and Aditi Chudasma. I feel like they're batting out of that number, like in a positive way. I feel like the way they bat it, they should be out there in the middle order. They do have the temperament. They do have the skill set as well. And I would love to see them bat a lot more. It just gives a fine balance to your side. If your bowlers bat well, you turn them into all-rounders. And they're young. They're quite young. Everyone needs to know that this U.S. side is quite young, and they can go to places if they are put in a high-performance environment, high-performance setup, and if there are short-term goals, if there are medium-term goals, if there are long-term goals for this particular crop, sky's the limit with these girls at the moment.
I get the impression, just by looking at the score sheet here, because unfortunately we couldn't watch the game, but just by looking at the score sheet here, when you see, like we've said before, like you said, Smith, Gatica could bat anywhere probably four through, through nine. And she could bat anywhere in there just fine. Obviously, Chidasuma and Ritu Singh, they could all of them bat. But when you look at the score sheet, you look at who bowled and who batted. Those who bowled batted in bowler's positions. Is this the coach, maybe Charlotte, maybe telling the team this is your role? We need the batters to take responsibility now. If you're not bowling, you're a batter. And I know at this stage, when we're so close to the ground floor, it's not unlike maybe like high school baseball, where you have your best pitcher might be your best hitter on your team. Things like that happen. As the level gets more and more difficult, you get more and more specialized. Do you think that might be, I don't want to speculate on what somebody is thinking, but we're seeing good batters here batting at the end of the order here. Do you think that this is just the coach sending a message like, hey, look, our batters are going to have to be batters?
What I've observed, and I might be completely off the hook, I might be completely wrong over here, is that there is a deeper malaise as far as coaching is concerned in the United States. Because there is a lot of resources involved from the parents. The parents are also present a lot of the times. Like, parents are ubiquitous in American cricket. There's some real pressure into giving some sort of a pie to each and every student, so to each and every trainee. If someone has not batted, they're given some bowling at some point of time in a game, even if they are not required to. So basically, everyone is given something to do in training, even though they don't excel in that particular department or not. And as a result, what's been happening is that we are failing to produce two-faceted cricketers. If you see the way Gitika Kodali could bat, I'm sure that she can handle herself pretty well in the middle order as well, but she would not have been encouraged by the coaches from the grassroots level to focus on both of her facets, right? And even in the senior men's team as well, in the past series, everyone was given something to do. They took this series as selection games, which I didn't quite really agree to. So I think there is a deeper malaise that everyone has to do something in a game of cricket that the coaching setup needs to move away from.
I think with the women too, with everyone being so young, everyone does a little bit of everything. And so it's hard. I look at this order and I said, well, yeah, Aditi could go up, but man, Asani bats at four usually, and she's batting at six. Jessica bats at four and she's batting at six. Ritu opens the batting and she's batting there at number seven. Githika comes in at like number four or five locally, and she's batting at eight. So all these individuals go in and bat. And Nika bats one down spot. Dish is an opener. Pooja, you have a lot of people who fit these batting roles up top the order. So I think it is hard in the women's game in particular with such a young crop that, and I agree with you, Smith, that if you give Githika Kodali an opportunity to bat in the middle, she's going to become a great all-rounder. You're going to have someone that you can really anchor and really be a game changer. I think it gets tough when everybody on this team you could look at as an all-rounder. Most of the individuals on the team you could look at as an all-rounder. There's very few people that fit with just one role. And I think for Charlotte, she's just trying to get, like you said, just trying to get at least everybody a little bit of experience in every facet. I think it's hard to find a balanced order. Now, I think you have to start getting to the level of like, all right, Aditi, you've batted so well at 8 and 9, you've got to go up. Or Githu, you've batted so well, or you got to start finding that. But I think, Nate, you have a point to it of, hey, we're going to let our bowlers bowl, we're going to let our batters bat, and then we're going to see how we stack up from there. I think as they play more ODIs, you'll see kind of these orders get reversed and just mixed around a little bit more.
And I think it's hard to argue against the way that they did it. When you look at this batting order, when you look at, obviously, Sindhu there at number four, Anika Kolan, Disha Dhingra, who scored a 50 in the first ODI, it makes sense. This batting order makes sense to me. It's just, maybe this is just, hey, look, we're used to seeing Gitiko batting in the middle order. We're just used to seeing that. Like you said, Chidasuma, she can bat much, much higher than that. This is a good thing. It's a good problem. That's a good thing to have going on. Also, we have to remember this is still at the ground floor, and I'm very happy with the trajectory of things right now. And like I said, you scored 210 against a good Scotland team. a lot of these names on the Scotland team, these are good players. You scored 210 against them. You hold them to 251. They got nothing to be upset about. There's nothing really that much to second guess here. I'm just really hopeful for the future right now. I think this is great. We have a few more too that didn't make the team who are on the horizon to look forward to. It's just hopefully everybody stays at it and everybody keeps playing, because there's only so many spots on the national team. And I know when the community's small as it is right now, it can be discouraging for some people to be left out, but someone's got to be left out. And of course, we'll see if we even get any of these T20s in, considering the extreme weather they've got over there. And Peter Delapenis seemed to just like, he arrived and was the bad luck charm. They just had nothing but rain. All right, let's get into men's stuff. The Canada Tour of the United States of America 2024. Now, this wasn't the Audi Cup. According to the USA account on Twitter, the Audi Cup is contested over one-day cricket, which is interesting because that's only ever happened twice. In the history of the Audi Cup, it's only ever happened one day cricket two times, but we don't really play three-day cricket anymore, so it makes sense that it would be the longer format. But I'm a little disappointed they didn't just call this the Audi Cup, because cricket is cricket. And where else are we going to play Canada in what's supposed to be a five-game series? It's been a while coming, and we're happy to see it. And I'll tell you what, I couldn't wait to watch this series, and I was very pleased with what I saw.
There was a lot that went right. Smith, you wrote about it, but I enjoyed the batting performances. I enjoyed a lot of the bowling performances. I thought Monin Patel probably batted the best he has in a while. I thought Aaron Jones batted the best he has in a while. You're looking at some of these names, okay, this is a time for you to step up and perform, and you get Monin Patel batting at a 170 strike rate. You got Aaron Jones batting at a 150 plus click. Anjos Kalsa going to do his thing. Stephen Taylor looked back in form. He looked back like caught in his fluid nature. There are some real positive signs of looking at at least the batting from this series.
There are a lot of positives that I could see as far as batting was concerned. I feel like marriages are made in heaven, right? And even more so are the successful opening pairs. I feel like are also made in heaven. The way Stephen Taylor batted, the way Monan Patel batted, they complemented each other pretty well. Righty, lefty, one is straight out of a coaching manual. The other's sort of a gladiator who will be in your face with his flamboyance. And it was so heartening to see, so refreshing to see Andreas Gaus in the middle order as well. I would like to make a bold remark. I think he is, in current form, the best T20 one down or middle order, if I could say, because he doesn't get to open for USA. He might be the best one down batter in the associate world in current form. The way you could see a stark difference in the quality of batsmanship when people are able to take on spinners, people are able to smoke spinners off the back foot. They don't feel compelled to leave the crease to force the issue. They are not forced to lose their shape to whack a cricket ball. And those sort of qualities stand out with Andreas. We all know what Monan Patel and Stewart Taylor could do at international level, but what Andreas did was a great shot up in the arm, in the middle overs, that is. And coming to Monan Patel's form in T20s, the way he batted, his batting seemed bereft of weakness, right? Him and Taylor looked just so sublime. So I feel like our opening pair has decoded the power play batting. Some of the shots they played just left you in awe. And Monan Patel's trademark stroke of charging the bowler and hitting him over the head is something to drool over. And let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, because they have to test themselves against the full members as well. But hey, does our opening pair have the prowess and temperament to emulate this feat against a full member? Yes and yes, I would say so. Just the clarity with which our top three batted. Human mind is such an amazing thing, I would say. The power of clarity in professional sport is quite underrated sometimes, but it makes you move mountains in many cases. It's just the clarity that maybe the leadership or the team management has instilled that in our batting for this series, like that you could see like people wanted to get a move on. Like Aaron Jones, I know he got out in the first T20 playing a reverse sweep, but I've been hearing that he's been practicing that stroke day in and day out. They could have, Aaron Jones could have easily played what, like 15 not out of 18 deliveries, right? Maybe probably 10 not out of 15 deliveries or something like that in that first T20. He chose not to do that. He wanted to employ that bold stroke, which may not have been useful for him against Canada, but hey, it might get him out of the jail against someone like a Shadab Khan, might get him out of jail against someone like Ravindra Jadeja, for that matter. So it's, I like the feeling around the group on based on what I saw. So I think I didn't see many people playing for the spots, which had been the case on so many of the previous USA tours or previous USA games. I feel like the clarity of thought that the batters had was overwhelming to see, very heartening to see.
I've got about four standout overall high-level points, my takeaways, my biggest takeaways. First of all, I want to say great job to Mangesh and his crew there for giving us four really good games. That wicket was great. We saw, we what more can you ask for than four good games? So great job, Mangesh, with the grounds crew there. Very good work. But obviously, it would have been great to have better drainage in the outfield and all that. He can't do anything about that, though, during the middle of the series. But in the four games we did see, the pitch was excellent. We have to tip our caps to the grounds crew there for doing such a wonderful job giving us four great games. The second of all, when have we ever seen USA do this well against Canada and then do this well against Canada four times? Four out of four. We haven't seen this before. This is, and yes, arguably, we should be looking to improving and playing against even more and more difficult talent out there. But in our history, Canada has always given us troubles. We've always played really good games against Canada. They've always been exciting games to watch as a fan. But it's been basically 50-50. You could almost toss a coin to see who's going to win that game. But not this time. All four of these games, USA won these games very fairly convincingly. They were good games, but USA did what they needed to do when they needed to do it. So I think the big picture here is that USA is getting better, even though we haven't had a T20 in 1.5 years. We are still getting better. And I think this is evidence that the Major League, Minor League project is working here in the USA. It's making the standard better in the USA. I don't think that's even disputable at this point, because that's what these guys are playing to get better. And we look like we're ahead of Canada in T20 cricket right now. We look like we're a better T20 team and we have a better T20 structure. They've been playing games out of their mind. They've been playing so much cricket lately. And yet we look like we were the team in form. And I think that just goes to show that the talent that we have on this team is very good. The talent we have to choose from is very good. And our domestic product, our domestic system, and everything is actually pretty solid. It's great. This is a great direction. I'm very excited about that. Another thing I'll say is I still think we have room for more balance on the team. After this series, I still have some questions. I had a question about how we would do when that top three that you mentioned that did so well, how would we do when that fails? And we got an answer to that in that fourth game. At least we saw one instance where we were 9-for-3, and USA still won the game. And I'll tell you what, watching that game, I didn't feel like we were in terrible trouble. In previous years, if I had seen USA 9-for-3 against just about anybody, I would have been like, oh no, here we go. We're finished. But I didn't feel that way. We had Nitish Kumar in the middle. We had Corey Anderson in the middle. These are two guys that are very experienced, and Nitish has been in great form for the last year. Form of his life, if you ask me. And so I was very confident that the two of them would take it home. I actually felt like we were going to still win the game.
I mentioned in my article as well, right? Imagine the mental baggage Nitish Kumar would have found himself in, right? The Canadians wouldn't have been short of a word. Nitish would have been constantly reminded of his earlier identity as a captain, earlier identity as a player. He came out of that youth system. He switched bases to the U.S. His World Cup spot, his Bangladesh spot, was riding on that game. I don't think so we're going to see the same 15, to be honest, for the Bangladesh series or for the World Cup. So a lot was riding on Nitish Kumar's innings over there. And kudos to Nitish Kumar to to come out with flying colors over there, because it's so hard. It's so hard to put your mind at ease. It's so hard to focus on the ball that's coming in at 130 clicks. It's so hard to focus on the ball that's coming in out of Saad bin Zafar's hands. Is it going to be an arm ball? Is it going to turn away? It's so hard not just to keep thinking that, is this going to be the last ball I play in USA colors? But it's, again, people talk about cricketers from India. I'm stressing on that fact. People talk about cricketers from the full members having a lot of tension, having a lot of commotion in their lives. Things that associate cricketers also go through is no short of what these people go through as well. Probably not in terms of social media flack that these guys receive, the full member ones. But hey, the struggles and the mental demons, so to say, that these people like Nitish Kumar have to fight as well, is just on another level.
And you can always turn social media off. You don't have to log on. You can always log off.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You can't log off of these things, though.
But nothing beats Hardik Pandya's mental state of mind right now. That is something that's on a different level.
We saw a lot of great performances. We saw many 50s. Some excellent bowling figures. And the interesting thing here, Harmeet Singh's forfer was his first forfer in either minor league, major league, or USA. In the highest levels of American cricket, in those three aspects of the highest levels of American cricket, that was his first forfer. Now, we all know he's capable of doing that at any given day. What's actually shocking, that's his first force for wicket haul. But when we know that there's reasons why that might be,
try to play him out, just like Rashid Khan.
Exactly.
At the international state.
Yeah. I was going to say, so you get in a team where this is supposed to be USA's all-star team, basically. This is, you get in a team where, who are you going to take on? You're going to take him on, or you're going to take Nosh on? It's, you can't win either way in that regard. So yeah, of course, he's going to take those wickets now. Shadley did well, I thought, in his role. He always bats to the occasion. He's excellent in that position where if he needs to recover an innings, he can. If he needs to just go for it, he can. Scoring a four a couple times on his first ball there. The one thing I didn't like from Canada was, we all know that Saad bin Zafar is their best bowler. He's probably their best all-around cricketer, if you ask me. He's their captain. Saad only bowled a couple of overs in the power play. So that worked out to our favor. You mentioned Manonk did fantastic in his role. You can't ask for better than what he did. 169 strike rate opening the innings at a 40 average. That's fantastic.
The way he rotated his bowlers as well, right? He gave the ownership to bowl in the power plays to Nosh, which he finds himself comfortable in. I feel like he gave people roles and give clarity where people find themselves comfortable in. And the versatility in his captaincy was up for display as well, right? If you would have observed closely, he did not give back-to-back overs or back-to-back spells unless there was a new batsman. He kept, no two bowlers bowled back-to-back overs. It was always like three or four bowlers that he rotated one over each during the middle of the innings, or even in power plays as well. There was a new Monank in T20s, so to speak. And yeah, it's a USA captaincy, as I say, is a throne of thorns. And I think there's a lot of diversity present as well in the USA squad. There are people who hail from South Africa, who hail from India, Pakistan, the Caribbean, and people from here as well, right? So I feel like the captain is that one gelling factor that keeps the harmony, and is that one gelling factor that keeps this team going, keeps the engine lights for this team going. The captain is like a gravitating factor, the gravitating entity that all the other players, despite whatever their ethnic background is, gravitates to, which is quite a good sign.
You're just saying that because he's a Patel. I think that's why you're saying that.
It's our magic trick, Nate. It's our magic trick.
Yeah. Magic trick.
Yeah, Aman must agree with you there, but he's obligated to. No, but what I was going to say, and yeah, Manonk's captaincy I thought was fantastic. Like you said, there was always something else for Canada to adapt to. They had some good bowling weapons that they could just throw Canada's way, and Canada who seemed content to try to ease through with the first over of a bowler. They might not see that bowler again for four overs now. So that forced Canada to have to play more aggressively if they wanted to get anywhere. And I think that helps. It helps when you have that many good bowling options. Obviously, you can't just do that. Whereas on the other hand, Saad Bin Safar's was very much matchup oriented, it seemed, with his captaincy. For example, I felt like Stephen protected. We know that Mononk has gotten out a few times to Saad Bin Safar. With Mononk opening with Stephen, the lefty, we didn't see Saad in the attack during those times. And I think I feel like this is a critique more of Saad. I feel like Saad is their best player right now. And he needs to, and I felt like he needed to bowl in those situations a little bit more. Personally, I love the guy. He's fantastic. I hope we can get him on the show soon, Amin. But when we play Bangladesh, we're not going to get that type of matchup mentality. We're going to get their best bowler in that best bowler's best moment. We're going to get power play bowlers. And that's what we're going to have. So I'm curious to see how we'll approach that in that case. And also, I'm curious to see if Andres is now the number three on the team. Amin and I both were shocked. We're surprised to see him batting at number three. We also think that he can handle just about any situation. Like you said, he bats so well against spin anyways. Oh, another thing. I think we might be able to shut down some of these comments on YouTube. All of the, like, India A comments, right? Everybody likes to say USA versus Canada, India A versus Pakistan A or something like that. Andres, we just have to rebrand Andres, right? We have to change his last name to House and spell it House. First name, Andre. Have him talk Andre. In an American accent the best that he can. And just pretend like he's from Los Angeles or something. What do you think?
It's ambitious. Just like me and you will never have the little Afrikaans thing to our speech. I don't know if he's ever going to have the full Southern Texas dialect that everyone's looking for there.
I'm just messing around. I find those comments. They're like, oh, when will we see more white Americans and things like that? Those things drive me crazy.
I wanted to talk about Milind Kumar. A solid team man on whatever I've seen, whatever I've heard. You know, a terrific player of spin bowling. We played a couple of gutsy knocks, trying to use the word gutsy over here, because of the circumstances, he found himself in the MLC last year. So was instrumental in at least a couple of games, if I remember it correctly, in having CSK win those tight moments. So I feel like I surely hope that his head is not on the chopping board yet for the Bangladesh series, and everyone gets a go, even Gajanan, right? It would be so unfair to even let Gajanan go after just one bad performance. It's like a catch-22 situation over here, isn't it? Do you stay with the same 15, right? When some of the people who didn't perform in one single game, right? Or do you get people in, or do you get people who deserve to be there in the first place right away, like Shayan, right? I feel like two wrongs won't make a right either. I feel like Shayan should be back in the squad as well. But it's again, right, at whose cost? And someone is going to be really hard done by as well, either Gajanan or Milind, if Shayan gets in.
I think that you put him in Usman's place. We have a lot of spin options already. I think you put him in Usman's Rafiq's place. You put Shayan in there. And yeah, I do feel like it was rough on Gash to play only two games, basically. In the first one, he faced one ball, and then...
The first one doesn't count, yeah.
Doesn't even count. So really, to get just one innings. At the same time, I felt like Nitish Kumar was unfortunately, he only got one innings. But he, to me, because of the innings, he played arguably the toughest innings of the freaking tournament. And because of that, to me, he's in the 11. I have him in my 11 right now because of that he deserves it, I think. But like, and you said, and I have Milind is my number 12.
Luck plays an important factor as well, right? Take nothing away from Nitish's game in what I'm about to mention. But so that game was played under 230 wicket, the wicket where Nitish got 70 odd runs. And it wasn't the same wicket as Corey and Milind struggled on. So just putting things in perspective, again, disclaimer, taking nothing away from Nitish's stupendous effort on debut, especially fighting those mental demons. It's just that I feel like our watchers or viewers need to know as well of what cricket was played on what wicket as well.
Yeah, that thing is interesting, the balances that you can have with this team, because you mentioned, I think the wickets obviously are different in every match, and it was the same wicket that Nitish got that Millen then Corey got, and it is now like, how do you go about picking this team from what you've seen? I think that's always the tough part of what's fair, what's not fair. At the end of the day, I don't know if anything's going to be fair. It's you have to just watch who you end up believing in at the end of the day. And right now we have probably, we know three Cerns, and Wonuk, Steven, and Andres are going to be in this team. We know Corey Anderson is going to be in this team, and we know Harmeet Singh and Nash are going to be in this team. And then from there, you have Ali Khan, Saurabh Netherwalkar, who at the end of the day are going to make the World Cup squad. And now you fill in the rest. And I think the rest includes Shadi Van Skalkwyk and who your other batters. And so I think for most part, you have the main crux of this team. It's just about those one or two spots. And there's always that, no matter what country you go to, no matter whether you're associate or full member, there are always one or two spots where someone's going to be hard done by. So someone's going to feel that this person should have gotten a run or this person should have got a run. I think it's now you make your decision, you back your player, and you go with it. And I think that's what's going to have to be after this Bangladesh series. And it'll be interesting to see which way they go.
And something that is deeply concerning for me, Aman and Nate, is also the dirt or paucity of death bowlers for USA. I don't see Saurabh Netherwalkar bowling four overs in every game. I don't see him bowl four overs. If he is to bowl four overs, he has to be wrapped up around the 12th or 13th over when the ball is still swinging. I've seen if there's no swing on offer in the death overs, can go for runs. So it is, you know, culpable of leaking runs as well. Add to a heaps of it, if you have some full member whacker who plies a straight in the T20 circuit. And apart from that, I think Shadley would eventually settle down as well, because I saw that he did follow a certain plan. I could sense a certain plan in his death bowling. 70 or 75% of the times did stick to, but Ali Khan has to be back against Bangladesh in Houston. These are big shoes to fill in the death overs. Ali Khan's are very big shoes to fill for USA in the death overs, and we just don't have a replacement for Ali Khan. So it's something that it's ailing the USA a lot currently.
We're not in this 18-man squad, though. We don't. Not in the 15-plus reserves. We don't have someone. First of all, Ali Khan's going to be hard to replace no matter what. But I feel like outside of this group, I feel like that's the one thing we need to address is bring in another quick.
Did you guys see anyone bowling slower bowlers apart from Shadley? Like, when this guy's slower bowls apart from Shadley in the dash?
Saurabh had two, I thought.
Saurabh did against the Leopards.
I don't think the Justin bowled even one. I don't think the Justin bowled even one. I would bring in Justin Dill.
I would look at Justin Dill and bringing him part of that squad.
That's right.
If Ali Khan's not available.
I agree with you. Saurabh, especially against the lefties, I saw him using a lot more variation with slower balls and things like that. I've enjoyed watching Saurabh's evolution and the way that he's trying new things. I think he got a sod with the dipping Yorker there, the slower dipping Yorker that hit him right in the foot. But yeah, you're right. That is the one thing I feel we absolutely need to address. We cannot go against Bangladesh. They're going to score big at the end. They're going to try to score big at the end. Everybody's going to do that. But yeah, we got to address that heading into that series, and then obviously heading into the World Cup. It's a weakness we need to shore up. Talking a little bit about Canada, how well some of them did. For example, we were just talking about fast bowling. Haliger, I was really impressed by him. I thought he bowled really well throughout most of the series.
Haliger bats too deep. I think he he should come in before. I know Saad batted really well, but I feel like he should be coming in before Saad. He is one of the cleanest strikers of the cricket ball in Canada. A brute of a force, cuts an imposing figure on a cricketing field. And we've seen him in the past as well, do some amazing things with the bat as well. So it was just beyond me why he was slotted so deep further in the batting order. And as the series went on, he changed his tactics in his bowling as well. He made a few people uncomfortable, so to speak, with his short deliveries. You know how Aaron Jones, how he gloved off Aaron Jones. It wasn't just a fluke, right? It was a proper bouncer that was directed to Aaron Jones. I feel like Heyliger is just aging like fine wine. He's 35 now.
Yeah, he was great, bat and ball. I agree with you every time. Between both teams, to me, he would be on my team of the tournament. I would have him on my team of the tournament.
By the way, people were asking, where was Jeremy Gordon? He was sent back for disciplinary issues.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what the issues are, but he was sent back for some disciplinary issues.
Well, Heyliger did great in his absence. Obviously, Saad did well with bat and ball. And Aaron Johnson had the most runs.
Yep.
Yes, of course, he batted four innings. So from the top order between the two teams, he batted four innings and pretty much everyone else batted three or less. But he still scored it. He scored a 74, and USA overcame that. He's a very good batter, and Canada lives and dies based on his production in T20 cricket. And he led the event in runs, and we still swept them. And that's a really good sign.
Yeah, you don't keep a good bat down for too long. Aaron Johnson's terrific. I thought the brilliant thing, like even if it was in between overs, like Sarbanot Ralkar got hit by him for two boundaries, and then comes back, goes to the pads, and just throws a little cutter at him, and he skies it up, and there's the wicket. I think the adjustments that Monunk made, throwing Harmeet Singh at him and then forcing him to try to play something different, not letting him just extend the hands, I thought that was brilliant. I think when you have a guy like Aaron Johnson, it allows you as a team to understand how to adapt, right? And I think that T20 cricket at the end of the day is all about how you can adapt, right? You can have a plan. The plan's going to go wrong. At some point, your plan isn't going to work. The team that wins is the team that's able to adapt the quickest. And the good thing for us is that we saw the ability to change up our plans relatively quickly, or be able to change within the over. The bowlers are able to outthink and outwork. And again, when Aaron Johnson, yes, he had four innings and he led the series in runs, he had one big innings of 74. Beyond that, yeah, he had the 134, and then he had the couple single-digit scores. You take that as a team who's playing Canada four times and with right. Bowling Aaron Johnson. So that was the positive dealing with Aaron Johnson for me from a American side of things.
I feel like someone who punched below their weight was Pargat Singh.
Yeah.
Yeah. He expected at least one big innings from Pargat Singh, because just the way he bats and the body of work and the experience he has from Indian domestic cricket as well, you would expect someone like him, when he walks into the Canada team, to be some sort of a leader, especially a batting leader on and off the field. But maybe it's not just, maybe our bowlers were way too good. And the way Harmeet kind of foxed him first ball was stuff of dreams.
Oh yeah, no doubt. He was a little bit disappointing. I felt Harsh Thakur did a great job in the middle order for Canada, bridging Aaron Johnson into the back of the order there, where the Heyliger could come in and pound the ball. I felt like Harsh Thakur did a great job, but yeah, I was a little bit underwhelmed with Pargat Singh personally. And Nick Curtin, we know Nicholas Curtin is not really a boundary guy. He's a run-two guy. He will run two every chance he gets. I think his lower strike rate here is a testament to USA's fielding, their ability to get to the ball quickly and get the ball in quickly. And when you have guys, we mentioned Milan Kumar earlier, when you have guys like him out at the boundary who gets to the ball quick, throws it in hard and accurately, it's going to neutralize guys like Nicholas Curtin a little bit more than if you have people in on the boundary who are doing those two things.
And something that really concerns me is the level of analytics USA might be getting in the World Cup, like when the heat is on, when you need to do some extensive homework, right? It's compare the level of analytics that they might be getting in comparison to the analytics that the full members will have on their disposal as well. All these things come into the high performance umbrella, which has, you know, which is absent in the USA ecosystem, in the USA pathway to the World Cup, to a home World Cup. and the lack of, I just hope, dearly hope, the lack of preparedness that USA has been subjected to might not overwhelm them when they play their first game against Canada in the World Cup.
Yeah, I agree. We know Pubidou is going to be ready. We know that's for sure. And we saw Canada's probably their best efforts. We saw their best effort in the Mustang series in that very last game when they won by 8 wickets. And we saw a team very similar to that team take the field against USA in this 4-game series. And then we saw the very best game from Canada in that last game. They could have easily won that game. I think that they won't lose for lack of preparation. Canada won't. I think maybe we won't win due to preparation. We might win simply because we're a more talented team, or we're just better right now. We might win for that reason, but I don't think it's going to be because of the way that USA's prepared them. It might be their own preparations and their own drive. And you mentioned before, players driving for 4 hours for a net session, players putting up with what they do to do what they do. That's going to have to be the thing that carries them. And I think they're so used to that sort of thing that they can get through these rough patches where, you know, guys like Bert Cockley are just cast aside, who has been working with them for years and years, since 2019, I believe. On their
2018.
Yeah, 2018, I think. Yeah. We've seen the players' fitness come a long way around in that period of time. It's been a revolution, basically. And now he's cast aside. So, yes, I am worried about that. I think this series here helped ease my mind a little bit, that the players at least are taking care of themselves, that our cricketers are at least up to the challenge. And honestly, one of my favorite things, Stephen Taylor is in great form right now. A year ago, not so much. But now we just saw Stephen Taylor be Stephen Taylor for a few games.
Like, if you get Stephen Taylor to be Stephen Taylor, that's the dream, right, for any American cricket fan. And the whole analytics, the high performance thing, it sucks when you see good people go. We talked about last week, Nate Burcockley. We talked about Jamie. We talked about Julie. But as you mentioned, the players seem to be doing what they need to do to at least keep things moving in the right direction. And so that's a positive, at least we can look at.
And there's been an encouraging development as well. I am not sure if people are aware, but there is some sort of an ice breaking between MLC and USA Cricket, because finally, I think they've agreed, each of the party has agreed to have the USA use the MLC ground in Grand Prairie. My understanding is that MLC was always willing to give that ground, even to stage the Canada Internationals as well, even to stage a high-performance training camp under Stuart Law stewardship. But now, so that is finally happening. My sources say that there is a camp that the USA players are going to be congregating in Dallas in the Grand Prairie Stadium on the 22nd, if I'm not wrong, right after the culmination of the Houston Open, right after the Houston Open final. So there is some good news that's coming out of the USA cricket camp.
Awesome news. That's great news. Anytime in the middle there, anytime on the wicket there, we know Dave Agnew's taking good care of that place. It's the gem of American cricket right now. So yeah, that's great to hear. We're excited about that. I think we should wrap it up, though. We've been talking for a good hour. Smit, always great to talk to you. I'm really happy to have you on this time, and thank you for your time and joining us.
Same here, man. Thanks, Aman. Thanks, Nate. Complete me, I'll come back for you.